Welcome to Keep Sweet, the Positive World Podcast. I am your host, Joshua Gonzalez, and with me today I have the ever elusive and charming Matt Tolbert. Say hi, Matt.
Oh, charming. I love it. Hi.
And hi, everybody. Welcome back. We have had a summer filled with so many adventures here in the Gonzalez-Tolbert household, Tolbert-Gonzalez household, whichever way you want. Matt, which do you prefer, Tolbert-Gonzalez or Gonzalez-Tolbert?
I don't have a preference.
He does, and it's Tolbert Gonzalez. So we have had a wonderful series of adventures here in the Tolbert Gonzalez household, but we are kind of back into the swing, the fall swing of things, and I am back with podcast episodes for you.
Yay!
So welcome back to Keep Sweet, everybody. On today's episode, I have a wonderful, wonderful interview for you that we will get to later. But before we get to the interview today, we're going to give you a little update about what's going on with us. We recently went to Hawaii.
Hawaii, aloha.
That was mahalo. A lot of fun. And we are back in the city, back home, missing Hawaii, wishing them all the best. And any updates for you, Matt?
Any update? I finally started my new job after like a 2-month transition period of being like overlapping. So now I'm, 100% in my new role, which is exciting.
Yeah. And what role is that and where?
Manager of creator recruiting and experience at VaynerMedia.
Woo! And what does that mean? What do you do?
It means like I recruit the content creators, I help train them and guide them and give them feedback and help them with their careers and all of that fun stuff.
Yay, that's so exciting. And I just started a new career as a real estate agent. Da-na-na, got my real estate license in 2 weeks here in New York State. And excited to get out there and start selling and buying and doing all the cool stuff for my clients.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. And I'm in a show.
Woohoo. Ooh,
performing again after this long, dry pandemic. Performing again, I am in Return the Moon, which is a virtual interactive theater performance brought to you by Third Rail Projects, a company that I've been working with off and on for 5+ years, which is such a long time. It's crazy. And this whole performance is through Zoom, so you can attend anywhere. We have tickets currently through September, and I'll put the link to that in the show notes for you all to buy tickets.
And you got to be in the New York Times this past week.
I know. I was in the New York Times because of the show. We got a wonderful, wonderful review in the New York Times, and we're very thankful for that. And yeah, it's not every day that you get to be in the New York Times, but
photo and name and everything.
My photo was there. My name was there. We're repping, I wish I could have gotten a plug for the podcast. That would have been just icing on the cake.
Next time.
So everyone, now that we are back into podcast world, we are also back to giving you a weekly dose of good news. And today's good news story comes to us from Good News Movement on Instagram, which I absolutely love and adore. So the headline to this story is, when a jazz musician went into cardiac arrest, doctors in the audience saved his life. Isn't that fun? So he was like performing. This guy, Henry Ray Fishbach, was a jazz singer, and he was performing last July, and he fainted during the performance. And then it became evident that he was in cardiac arrest, but there were 3 medical professionals in the audience, and they rushed up to him and immediately started chest compressions and figuring all that out and saving his life, keeping him alive, resuscitating him until he was able to be transported to the hospital to recover. And this happened actually, these were residents, orthopedic surgery residents, which is funny because we have an orthopedic surgery resident friend. But he's not one of these people, at New York Presbyterian. So like this happened like uptown, Manhattan. in our old stomping grounds.
Oh, wow. When you say last July, do you mean 2020 or 2021?
It doesn't say a date, but I'm guessing it's 2020.
Oh,
that this happened.
Okay. I didn't know we were doing concerts then.
Yeah. Obviously this picture wasn't taken, on the day of, but they are outside.
Oh, okay.
So I'm
So lucky. How serendipitous.
I know, very serendipitous, and also just like nice to know that if you do have a heart attack and there's a doctor nearby, you may be okay. You know, I guess that's nice to know. I don't know. Good for these three for saving this dude. Because also, like, think about it. Like, it's not, I mean, I don't know their medical careers, but they're orthopedic surgery residents. So it's not like they're like, well, I guess they have plenty of training. Because, like, our friend, he's, like, spent many a nights in the ER. So they can do it all. Hashtag healthcare workers can do it all. Thank everyone for them. So that's a great story. Henry Ray lives to sing another day. Thanks to these folks. And, yeah. Any other thoughts on that good news story, Matt?
No, just I hope there's doctors around when I have something happen.
Good. Yes, we hope there's doctors around. All right, so on to today's interview. Hey, everyone. Today's podcast guest is a performing artist and arts administrator. Please welcome to the podcast, Edward Rice. Hi,
Hello.
Edward.
Hello. It's so lovely to be with you today.
It's so lovely to be with you in person.
I know.
You are, I mean, besides Matt, of course, you are my very first in-person guest.
Well, I'm honored.
I'm honored that you're here and you're on the episode. Edward is going to share a lot about his life and his work as both an artist and an arts administrator and how those things work in tandem and work together and all that jazz. So first, Edward, can you please give the audience a little introduction into yourself and how you got where you are?
Sure. My name is Edward Rice. I use he, they pronouns. Mm-hmm. And I work as a performer, an arts administrator, and those things in my mind are really the same artistic practice. I'm just using some different aspects of my skill set to do the different things. But I really feel like when I'm doing performance work, I feel very engaged as an artist. And when I'm doing my administrative work, planning, emailing, that sort of thing, budgeting, all that feels as much a part of the artistic practice for me. The way that I got into performing was, oh man, a long time ago. I was 10 years old and my mom took me to an audition for The Nutcracker. And
classic.
Very classic indeed. And I ended up performing in The Nutcracker for about 5 years. And that got
me. Oh, wow.
Yes. I did 5 seasons of it. I started as just one of the boys in the party in Act One and worked my way up to being a toy soldier and eventually a rat. Mm-hmm. All the classic roles. And that sort of led me into a path of performing in a lot of ways. I ended up starting to take more dance classes because of that and ended up majoring in dance performance in college. I got a graduate degree, a Master's of Fine Arts in Dance Performance at the University of Iowa. And that really led me to come to New York.
Yay.
Yeah. And now I'm here. I do a lot of work in the immersive theater world, but I also still do some dance performance, and I produce things, keep very busy.
Yes, you do. You are one of the busiest people I know. And I mean, like, I kind of share that too, where, like, we both really like to just keep going, working on things. I mean, because, you know, otherwise we're just sitting when we could be making art somehow. And so we want to make that. And yeah, I don't know. I like it. So you are here now in New York City. How did you first get into the, like, arts admin world? Like, how do you establish yourself there and learn that you had those skills and learn that when you're not performing, that is a place that you would kind of want to be?
I've done arts administration in some form or another for a really long time. Starting mm-hmm. back in high school, I just ended up being on a lot of committees. So, you know, helping to administer, like, the theater program at my high school. So I was the props chair for a couple Ooh. Seasons, yes. And then I was helping to do fundraisers and such for the dance company that I was in high school. And that just continued to happen for me all throughout college. There was a time in my college program at Illinois State University where I was considering being a stage manager. So I stage managed a couple things, both that were college productions, and then that college sponsors a summer Shakespeare festival every year that I ended up assistant stage managing two productions during that. And so I've just always done it. I've always enjoyed both being on stage and understanding all of the machinations to make the production happen. They yeah. both really excite me.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think it also just makes you such a well-rounded, collaborative person to work with on any production in any capacity when you kind of know how to do it all and you know also what goes on behind the scenes or behind the table or in front of. So you really have that empathy and compassion with the people who you are working with when maybe things aren't going as smooth as possible. You're like, oh, well, I've been there when this budget didn't work and this prop wasn't delivered on time and blah, 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 blah. So take your time. We'll get it sorted. It's fine. That's at least what I've taken away from working on both sides, I think, the most. You ended up kind of doing all of these other jobs. I, too, that's very similar path, like in college and all those other, like when I first moved to the city, I was very much wanted to be as close to the art as possible when I wasn't like performing. Mm-hmm. And it takes a village to make any production. And so like having a hand in productions is just something that's so nice. Even if you're not performing, you know, we still are helping to make it happen. And I love that. When I'm not performing. So now you are, we met working for Third Row Projects, which is an immersive theater company here in the city. And that is where I met you whenever I joined for Grand Paradise. You were a performer. Were you working? Were you like on staff then?
Yeah, I was also the business manager for Third Row Projects at the time.
Okay. So you were that role for a while, mm-hmm. doing lots of those businessy things. And then I started, for those that don't know, I started as the like front doorman box office associate for Paradise and eventually moved on to working for the box office and some in the marketing department and all that jazz. And it's a very small staff that Third Rail had. And so we worked so closely together and kind of all the departments kind of overlapped so we can get everything done. And I just like admire how I think I'm a good like arts administrator and performer, but I am not the type of type A personality that you are and that like Matt is, my husband. I just don't have that in me. Where does that come from? And do you know that you're that good at it?
I don't really know where it comes from. I think an attention to detail certainly comes from my family.
Okay.
My mom is super organized and like detail oriented, and my dad too in a different way. He when he was working was a microbiologist, so as a scientist, you just really have to check and do all the details. Like he was working in sequencing viruses and such.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, there's a lot of details there to track. So I got my spreadsheeting sort of genetically. And also my rising sign is Virgo. So I think that is a heavy influence on my type A-ness as well.
Of course. And another thing I've learned working with Third Rail is the fluidity it takes sometimes to be able to seamlessly shift in like performance mode, admin mode, switching those hats so quickly. And when we've worked together for a few years, we all are so fast to do that sometimes we switch those hats mid-conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's so amazing to witness, but like, how was that for you? Like learning how to really like compartmentalize those different roles. Cause I mean, sometimes you have on some productions in the past, you have had like 5 different roles in the same production. How do you keep up with that and switch so easily?
Well, my whole professional life has really been in a freelance mode. Like, technically, I've had a lot of time where I was coded as an employee and that kind of thing. But even in those moments, I had more than one job all the time. And I think it's a lot of practice to understand what it's like to... You know, my first job in the city was working for a dance nonprofit called Dance New Amsterdam, and I was in the production department doing a variety of things. And what was amazing about that job is it supported me in being able to be in the dance community and also have the flexibility to perform on occasion. Yeah. And that switching between different ways of being is sort of was built into the culture there that... As staff members, we got to take class for free. So you would be in a staff meeting and then go and change your clothes and then take a class and then change back and then go back into your day of getting things done. So the short answer of that is like years of practice. And it's lovely to hear you say seamless, but to be honest, it doesn't always feel seamless. There are certainly moments where like, the administrator brain like keeps rolling a little bit longer into the performance space, and sometimes vice versa. And I think there's a real practice around mindfulness, like being really present in the thing that you're doing right now. And for me, I will never get my to-do list done for a day. It's just impossible. Like there are so many things I'm curious about and so many things that I want to do that I just have to really focus on what the moment is asking of me and what the people around me are asking of me and get those things done and do those things to the fullest and realize that the next day I will try again and get to the next set of things.
I love that. I love that. We are so similar in that regard as well. So another reason why I... wanted you on and love you is because you are also an incredible educator. You have taught me how to do so many admin things. You have also taught me how to do so many performance things that there is absolutely no way I would have been able to do without you. So I would love for you to educate all of us a little bit about, you know, this kind of dual role situation. Do you recommend it for artists? How one could go about setting themselves up in that way so that, you know, their money job is still working in the arts, but then they have performance as well. And any advice around trying to build this life? And if you like say, no, I don't recommend it, that's also fine.
I mean, I think that there is a way for every human to engage artistically. And that can be on whatever scale works for each person. But I think having a creative artistic outlet is actually a human need in a lot of ways. And if...
For sure.
And if you are a person that wants to spend a lot of time making art, you have to realize, I think you have to realize that In the environment, in the country, in the economy that we're in, that is a business. To be able to...
Amen.
That's right. That to be able to put your work out there in whatever mode you're making in, you have to have some allowance for the fact that you are in a marketplace of some kind or another, and they can look a lot of different ways. So I think... allowing your curiosity to not only be about the particular form, acting, painting, photography, dancing, what have you, but also like what is the environment around having eyes or ears on your work? And not everyone is going to be spreadsheety, and not everyone is going to be like super invested in marketing their own work, which is the reason why we have to work with other people, because people have different interests and skill sets. But I do think we need to have that curiosity. And for me, whenever I'm curious about a thing, that's really how I learn more and end up getting better at that particular thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Stay curious, everyone. Stay curious. So that's amazing. Thank you for all of that. I think that is so helpful, especially to I mean, honestly, it's a helpful reminder to every artist. It's like, yes, we make the work to make the work, but it's really nice if the work gets seen or viewed or experienced. And so we have to know how to get the work out there, especially these days where it's like there's so much content and art and things that people are easily able to put out there on the internet in various forms now. And so you're competing against so many other things. You really have to be, you have to know how to get it in front of people. And so it's incredible skill to learn. I support that, second that, all that jazz. So in the last few years, I have witnessed you going from, yes, an arts administrator to like the next level of like this producerial role. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that transition, like what made you want to go there to like a more responsibility, more just work, more every, it's a very bigger role that you have taken on. Do you like it? What's different about it?
Well, I will say one of the things that I am most grateful for with my relationship with Third Rail Projects is that I have been given the opportunity to grow both artistically and in this administrative space. I really started with them just helping Janine, one of our co-artistic directors, run payroll. And then that has built its way to currently I am the associate managing director for the company, which is really helping the three owners and co-artistic directors run the business of the company. Mm-hmm. And then, gosh, when was it? I think it was around 2018. I really started into this producerial role because the company was starting to take on more work than normal. And so usually Tom, Zach, or Janine would be the ones who were acting as producers for a piece. Some usually called like a line producer, like the people who are in charge of making sure that the train gets to the station on time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the show happens or the relationship, it gets formed with a producer, producing entity, a partner, theater, what have you. Mm-hmm. The difference I experience when I'm in the producerial role is that there is not someone giving me the list of tasks to accomplish. Mm-hmm. That it is really creating the pathway between starting something and where it will complete. So usually I'm working with one of the directors who has an opportunity, and we imagine like, okay, so however many months from now, there will be this performance at this place, and we think it's going to look like this. And artistically, the director and the support staff, designers, assistant directors, what have you, stage managers, performers, build the artistic pathway that gets us to that spot. Yeah. But then there also is this other production and sort of business pathway, working with various partnerships, that kind of thing, of like what needs to happen when, so that on the day that we say there's the first show, we actually have the things that we need where we can have the first show. And it's making the to-do list and imagining many lists and many timelines and many budgets and a constant process of taking in more information and reformatting the plan to make sure that we can still get there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that is incredible, first of all, but I also think it's extra incredible because like, yes, like commercial theater productions like Broadway or whatever, there is change and things that happen along the way. But in Third Rail's work, for example, these changes can be huge, and they can be way different changes than you would normally typically find in a commercial theater, where it's like, oh, the set piece is changing. But for third rail, it's like, oh no, we're like completely redoing this kitchen of this space so we can cook a whole bunch of food also for our audience. Like, there's so much that can change. And so how do you deal with those huge unknowns and changes?
I mean, I think it is iterating on the process of making a show multiple times and starting to get to know, you know, a lot of the people in and around Third Rail Projects have been working with them for 5+ years. And mm-hmm. so there is just some patterns that get into place that we can know how a thing tends to go.
Great.
And also know, like, oh, we usually end up, this pattern usually happens, so how do we disrupt this one? So it's like choosing the things that work really well for us and sticking with them, and noticing the things that don't work as well, and being curious about, well, how could we do this a different way?
Yep.
How could we project a budget in a different way so that we stay more on top of the scope of what the work mm-hmm. is? The thing about Third Rail's work and a lot of companies that are doing what's called devised theater, which in this case means, like, in a lot of Broadway productions, what happens is that there is already a script and a libretto that has been worked on already. And mm-hmm. so when the production company comes together to put it on Broadway, there are a lot of knowns already.
Yeah.
And in a lot of devising work, you are writing the script and writing the music in rehearsal at the same time that you're figuring out where you're going to do the show yeah. and who's going to be performing it and who's building the stuff. So if you take the like production trajectory I learned about in my stage management course in college,
yay.
You take that and you sort of chop it up and you put it in many different orders. And so it is just trying to ride the wave a little bit, like making a yeah. very clear plan, but knowing that that plan's going to get disrupted yeah. at some point in time or another.
And I think that takes a very specific personality that I could be wrong, but my hot take is that I don't think a lot of people have the ability to be that flexible and that ability to ride a wave like that, without being stress balls.
Well, there's plenty of stress happening too, but
sure. But I think, you know, it's like handleable stress.
Sure, sure.
For some people who have been through the ringer a few times, it's like, oh, we know how. We don't know anything about this yet.
Yeah,
and so, oh wait, do you have something to say about that?
Oh, I was just gonna say, I think we've discovered the benefits of working in that way. That, ooh. I know that we'll talk about Return the Moon in a little bit.
Yeah, like right now.
But oh,
you brought it up, so we can talk about
it. We're doing it now. Great. But I think, like, with Return the Moon, some things only became clear later in the process of making the work when people were starting to watch it. And
yeah.
And if we said, oh, no, we're done taking in information
exactly.
about this, we're, oh, these things are already set in stone, I don't think the piece would be as strong as it is, because we let information in and mm-hmm. be like, ooh, you know, we have not changed everything around in the way that we have with some other productions in the past.
Yes.
But I think the benefit is that the more information you let affect the whole process, the budget, the script of the show, the performance, mm-hmm. the designs, just the stronger the thing is in the end.
I 100% believe that so, so, so much. And I love that. That's a struggle I have with, like, the devised theater, especially working with Third Rail, where it's so collaborative. They do let the information from everywhere inform it, versus like a commercial theater where it's like, no, this scriptwriter, this playwright is not budging. They think this is the vision and it's going to stay like this, which can let the piece suffer if, you know, everyone's like, this isn't working, and they're so hard-headed or ego, they let the ego get in the way instead of doing what's best to serve the piece, which is and so important. So we're talking about Return the Moon. For those listening, Return the Moon is Third Rails and a fun collective group of artists production that's happening right now. It is a, I'm doing a bad job of of introing this. So Edward, you can jump in at any moment. It is a virtual production all on Zoom. And so you can buy tickets. I'll put the link in the show notes of the podcast. You can buy tickets. We are running through September, the end of September right now. And it is a devised piece that we, you know, we have four performers and a stage manager all in various locations of New York. I'm performing in my bedroom, and then everyone comes on Zoom and they see us performing in our apartments, and we do a whole show for them, and it's great and it's cool. It is so very different. I mean, it's a lot the same in a lot of ways of some of Third Rail's past work, but it is also very, very different because it is this first virtual piece. And you, Edward Rice, are producer of this piece. So how has that been for you to be working on a piece that is so different when we are scattered across the country, even? Our director's in Denver, and we did this whole thing. How has that been for you?
It's been interesting, and I feel like I've learned a whole lot.
Oh, yes.
During this process. With the pandemic happening, Third Rail really got a lot smaller than it's been in the last few years. When we were in March of 2020, Third Rail was employing around 100 artists.
Incredible.
Between all the various projects.
Yep.
And since that time, having to be dormant for so long, we've gotten a lot smaller. And so many of us who normally would be wearing a lot of hats even took on a few more. So in this case, producing also has a little bit of the flavor of being the production manager. Mm-hmm. So myself and Kristen, our stage manager, and Marissa, who's the assistant director on the piece, are sort of sharing that role. But I am definitely feeling, oh, having a few more things to take on and manage. And honestly, I don't know that it's super sustainable, but I'm very thankful for that. The chance to take a peek at a few more corners of our process is really interesting. I feel like I've learned some things about budgeting in a different way. I feel like I've learned some things about what it is to be outside the rehearsal process. So some things that I've helped produce, I've also been a performer.
Yeah.
Some things I've helped produce, I've also been an assistant director on. And there's just a different thing to being having a window on the process from a different room.
Yeah.
That allowed me to stay fresh with the work, where I felt the ability to see the performance from an audience member's point of view in a way that was a little bit easier than in past things where I'd been in rehearsal every single
yeah.
day.
Yeah, yeah.
The being on Zoom has its ups and downs for sure. But what I love about this piece is that it is turning this funny immersive term, which can mean so much, but for Third Rail, immersive theater has usually meant putting the audience in the middle of the world of the show. And we're flipping that on its head for Return the Moon so that the show is in the world of the audience members' home, office,
yeah.
vacation, destination, yes. wherever. You know, we've had people in the lobbies of hotels. We've had people like on the street somewhere. Mm-hmm. We've had people in their homes.
In cars.
Yeah.
In a pool.
And I think the form of immersive still really works here because the audience member is invited in and the audience members are essential to the show happening.
Yeah.
That you all performing like wouldn't actually have some lines to say yes. without the audience members there and providing their input into mm-hmm. filling out the script on a yes. particular night.
That is also like one of my favorite parts of this piece is that how integral the audience is to actually making the piece and making the piece happen. Because I feel like some others, it's like, we can definitely do the whole thing with no one there. I mean, it's weird. Like, why would we do that? But it's really, you can't do that with this one. And so that's very, I love that too with this piece.
I'm also so thankful that Zoom and this piece allows us to be in relationship to an audience that is all over the world.
Oh, yes.
You know, we've been very lucky that the company has put on some shows that have had some like theatrical tourism. You know, people came to Brooklyn, came to New York City to see some of our work. And this is a moment where that work can kind of come to them. So we've had people all over the United States, like in Illinois, in Florida, in California. We've also had people see the show from Saudi Arabia yeah. and Tokyo. Yeah. And
I had a Sweden yeah. the other day in my room.
And I find that's one of the things that we, that I think that this is a thing that we have started to take for granted with our exhaustion with Zoom, is that the delight and joy that you can connect with people where distance is not important. Time is super important and what time zone you're in and that kind of thing. But that we can still find a way to gather together, pandemic or not, is really mm-hmm. beautiful to me.
Yeah. That is so beautifully said and so well put and such a great note and point about this piece. That is another one of my favorite parts, is people from anywhere can see it. It's crazy. So everyone check out Return to the Moon once again. Link in the show notes. We have tickets through October. So get your tickets. Come see us. It's a blast. And Edward says that he has had an interesting window on the outside, but one of these days we're going to pull you in to swing for us and you're going to be in it. So I'm just, that day I sure will happen. So what is next for Edward Rice? What is next for you? I mean, Return the Moon is ongoing and your role is ongoing, but anything else that is next for you that we can be watching and like, ooh.
Sure. I will be performing in a dance piece by Elephant Ooh. Jane Dance coming up in January at Connecticut College up in New London, Connecticut. Ooh. It is a piece that is using the Carpenters music. And so that is a lot of fun. And it's a work where we, it's another one of these situations where we had a whole tour lined up right as the pandemic was hitting. And so all those dates got postponed. So we're just starting to get things back on the calendar. So you can go to the Connecticut College website and find tickets to our performance in January for Elephant Jane Dance.
I'll put that in the show notes as well. That's so great. Look at you doing all the artist things. Go, Edward. That is so great. Edward, thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you for educating us and talking a little bit about your role in your life and your career. And so artists, that is a path for you. You can do it. We did it, kind of. Edward's doing it better than I am. But you can do it, and it's great. So, yeah, thank you so much, Edward. Everyone, wish Edward merde. And so that was the amazing, amazing interview with Edward Rice. And I loved having that conversation with him about, you know, juggling the life and the balance between being an artist and also being an arts administrator and doing, you know, straddling both sides of the table, as I like to say, as I just made up. But Matt, Do you have any thoughts on that? Because you spent a lot of your time in New York kind of doing both as well, you know, having your artistic side, but also having your type A administrative producerial side. Like, how was that for you? And like, any advice or thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely talk about it on my episode if you want to rewind back to episode something.
Something, yeah.
But, I mean, it's really hard to do. I mean, if you're not in a place that allows you to be your full self and they limit you to one side, then get out of there and find a new place.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. Awesome. Yeah, that was wonderful. So everyone, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at KeepSweetPod. You can email us at KeepSweetPodcast@gmail.com. You can find me at Josh Wadham and DM me anything about the podcast that you want. If you have any guest recommendations or anything like that, let me know. And thank you so, so, so much for listening. Be sure to share the episode if you like it. That really does help us out so, so much to getting the podcast out there. And I hope you all have a very, 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 very wonderful day. Thank you for coming back and listening. And as always, keep sweet.